So what sounds more appetizing to you, Jim? Outback, Buffalo Wild Wings, Little Caesars? I mean, it's basically bowl season now, is junk food season,
it
right?
It is. It's all junk food, isn't it? It's there's not a single, you know, low-calorie, heart-healthy option on this menu.
Yeah, you never see, you know, like a salad bar bowl or anything like that.
Well,
salad bowl. There should be a salad bowl.
There should be. We should talk to your wife there, see if you can get one of those P90X Shakeology bowls.
There you go. Anyway, right. I was going bowling.
I can't believe. Well, first we should say welcome to 12 Saturdays. I'm James Blaydell.
And I'm Tori Brecht.
And we are just thrilled that we are, at worst, we've locked in 6-6.
At worst. And let's hope it doesn't get to that.
No, now, like I was saying, basically every chance I get, you know, I feel like mediocrity has been achieved. Now it's all upside.
Yeah, just gravy from here, right?
Well, compared to last year, I mean, you know, we'd take it. So 6-4 with 2 winnable games left. What did you think of Purdue? I mean, we knew they were bad, but does that mean we're less, really, really, really less bad? I don't know how to gauge this.
They're one of the worst teams I've seen in some time, I guess, in the Big Ten. I mean, they were just not very competitive at all. I mean, really, their only true scoring opportunity came via the muff punt that Iowa just handed to them, and they came down. Yeah. But, I mean, I never really was overly worried that Iowa wasn't going to win that game. I guess my only worry was, you know, are they going to win it ugly or run away with it? And they kind of ran away with it there at the end.
They did. They finally got some you know, they finally got some things all clicking together. But yeah, I think one of the things that really dawned on me is, like, one way to potentially measure good teams versus bad teams is how long can you stay in it? You know, if you think about it, Purdue was basically in this game for a quarter and a half.
Mm-hmm.
We were in the Ohio State game for three plus quarters. So, yeah. You know, I mean, does that mean that it's a much bigger delta between us and Purdue than on the bottom end than it is for us and Ohio State on the top end? Or, you know, I mean, I realize it's kind of a goofy way to look at things, but really, I think what I'm trying to get at is even a bad team can look good for 15 minutes.
Well, yeah, you know, where you see that a lot is in basketball too. You know, that because I'm always that you're looking at a basketball game and it's like, oh my gosh, it's 24-24, and you know they're halfway through the first half, and then you check back later and it's like a 25-point win. So
right.
Football is kind of the same way to a certain extent too. I think it's, Jim, this is going to get kind of scientific for you, but I think it's because both teams start with zero.
Well, that would be math. That's well, and I think there is some psychology to it too, where the underdogs maybe come out and say, this is so bad, we can hang with these guys. And the guys on top are like, okay, when's it going to start clicking here? It really should start clicking here, you know, and almost impatient to get the blowout underway.
Right.
Whereas the other team maybe take some false hope and keeping it close for as long as they can. I liked the way the offense looked. Can we say that besides the muff punt and I think something that happened on second string, defense pitched a really good game, almost a shutout.
Yeah, you know, and quietly this defense has played really well this year. I mean, I think they're ranked 11th in the country, you know. And outside of maybe the Wisconsin game, there weren't very many where they look like they've really collapsed. I mean, there have been some issues here and there, but overall, their level of play has been back to more like Iowa Hawkeye standards, I think.
Yeah. Now, who's been the best offense that we've faced this year? We talk about Michigan State, obviously, best defense, probably in the country. But who's been the best offense?
I think Wisconsin. I mean, they can, you know, kill you with the run, obviously, but they've got that, you know, killer wide receiver in Aberderis and a serviceable enough quarterback if he's given time. I've got to think it's Wisconsin.
Okay.
Maybe Minnesota, actually, you know. Well, they've been doing all right.
Not when they played us, but no. Since then they have definitely found their rhythm. I would have to go with Ohio State, honestly, because I think we were having one of our best offensive days. They did not punt. They never saw fourth down. So,
yeah. I guess, you know, I might have blocked out their offensive performance a little. It was like PTSD or something.
Well, they didn't have a lot of big plays. I think that's why people maybe sell them short, but they just methodically march down the field like you weren't there.
Yeah, they're kind of carve you up type of team, aren't they?
Yeah. So, and we'll never know Northwestern what could have been, and good riddance as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly. So here's my question for you. Jordan Canzari, really the answer we've been looking for, or a guy who got his chances against a bad team and did what he had to do?
Can I say, why do those have to be, why is that a choice? Why do those have to be mutually exclusive? I think that, you know.
My question is, can we expect him to run for over 100 yards against Michigan and Nebraska?
One of them. here was my take on that, because we were watching him pop a little bit the week before, and he had that long run against Wisconsin.
Right.
You know, I think it's a combination of, I think Canzari was always hitting the hole a little bit faster than Bullock. I think Bullock was a better all around, you know, he could catch out of the backfield. He was definitely better in passing downs.
Let's pick up, yeah.
You know, and I think that, you know, Bullock was your B plus guy all around, whereas Canzari, all he did was hit the hole and make the first guy miss.
Yeah.
But now later in the season, where everybody's banged up and everybody's maybe just a half a step slow, and putting in Canzari and giving him that, where he's still hungry, he still wants to, you know,
fresh legs,
get on the field. And oh, by the way, I also happen to be the guy that hits the hole just a little bit faster, and the offensive line coming into its own and making those holes for him. I mean, I think it's just all of it's kind of feeding off of itself. But Bullock had a good game too.
Yeah, so. I mean, and that's what I want to see. I want to see Weissman heal up, and everybody. I want to see all three of them really, you know, and I'd like to see a game plan that really and Daniel for that matter. Yeah. But I'd like to see a game plan that really utilizes all their strengths, you know, soften them up with a few big Weissman runs, and then bring in Canzari to blast a couple long ones, and then get Bullock out on the edge where he seems to excel, and maybe catch a couple passes. I mean, you know, I know it's a tough problem for Ferentz to have. He says, you know, it's hard to get that many guys in, but, you know, we run a lot.
It's the typical Iowa problem where you just have so many good options at running back.
Exactly. I mean,
how many years have we been saying this?
No, it's a good problem to have. I just hope to see it continue. And let's really talk about, you know, what's making it all happen, and that's those guys up front. The offensive line's been playing good.
They have been, and wasn't there a – I may be drawing a blank here. I thought there was an injury where we had Donald move in for Walsh or something. There was some shifting around going, I thought.
Yeah, there have been a few moving parts, but not as many as last year, and I think that's made a big difference.
And I think that we may be a victim of our own success, and Scherff is going to go.
Well, hopefully
he's getting a lot
not.
Of love.
Hopefully not. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see where that all ends up.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, going back to the running back story, it seems like when you have four guys, the solution to your problem is you need to drop more plays where two of those four guys are on the field at the same time.
For sure.
You know, if you've got – move Weissman back to fullback, you know.
Yeah.
You know, put Bullock in as a slot receiver, you know, with Canzari in the backfield. You know, all there those things become – then you can start doing those jet sweep, like, and all those guys, those cool kids
Oregon are doing. You're talking a little crazy here, Jim. Do you forget who our coach is? Come on now. Now, here's something, though, that I enjoyed from our friends at Blackheart Gold Pants. It was their comment about the fifth dimension that we entered into when you see Don Schompert and the third-string running back and who else? They had three guys that you never expected to see have breakout games.
Oh, yeah, it was really – well, and then CJ had his touchdown, too. So
exactly.
Schumpert, where's this guy? He's a senior now, right? So this is his spotlight moment.
How long have you and I talked about how when he's out on the field, he looks like a Big Ten – like a good Big Ten receiver. He's, like, tall and lanky and muscular and fast, and he just can't catch.
Oh,
now he's catching.
Really, really impressive last time, and I think I even made a few jokes about that on Twitter. Like, you know, I love saying "great catch, Don Schumpert," and Canzari had. It's not like he busted off a long run, but he was getting 7 yards every time he popped out of the out of the backfield.
There were gaping holes, though. I mean, I don't know. And I'm saying this partially to sort of, you know, put the brakes on the Kanzeri savior expectations. You're not going to see that kind of thing against a team not named Purdue, I don't think. I mean, not that he's not going to break some runs and do some good things, but, I mean, some of that was just ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree. And then CJ, what was this deal where that was supposed to be, it was like, third and one, and they were supposed to call a quarterback sneak, and yeah, he snuck it 16 yards into the end zone.
I mean, it was a quarterback keeper, you know, the ball.
Yeah, no, it was a fun game, and I guess the best, one of the best articles was, you know, hey, if you've got an ailing offense, there's no faster way to get healthy than play Purdue.
That is absolutely the truth.
Well, should we toast this one, sir, and move on to our expert?
I think that's a great idea.
All right, you do the honors. Well, Tori, I got a interesting expert lined up for us this week. This gentleman who went to high school with my wife and is actually almost embarrassingly a high achiever when it comes to his particular field, which is wrestling. He was a state wrestling champion, and then I believe an All-American at Iowa, wrestled on the Dan Gable team of the 90s, and has an individual national championship, and then now is a wrestling coach for City West. So really almost kind of painful, because we usually have guests on that we like to talk about quirky things, but this guy is a legitimate you know, wrestling celebrity.
So does this mean that we're like actively engaged in like legit sports journalism right now?
Ooh, slow down, Tiger. But yeah, it is probably the closest we'll get to having a you know, an actual multi-sport you know, media empire.
Well, let's get to it then.
All right. So we'll say to welcome Mark. All right. Well, welcome to another segment of Ich bin Expert, which is the new name. It's stuck now, Tori, I'm afraid. And our guest this week is actually kind of a big deal. He is a former wrestler for Iowa and a two-time All-American and NCAA champion.
And on the only team of Iowa Hawkeyes to win a national championship, I believe, while I was actually at Iowa. Which is always exciting.
Well, now you're dating yourself, though. Now people know how old you are.
Well, that's okay.
All right. Well, welcome, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
So how did you, you know, you've had obviously an illustrious career as a real athlete, as opposed to people like Tori and I who just sit around and make smart aleck comments. How did you get into this? I mean, what point were you in high school or maybe junior high when it just kind of clicked and you're like, hey, maybe I've got some aptitude for this?
Well, I mean, I grew up in wrestling. I mean, my dad was my high school coach, and he had coached at Eagle Grove for a long time. And, you know, I kind of grew up in that wrestling room. So it was kind of second nature for me. And, you know, it was always my goal or my dream to wrestle at the University of Iowa, and you know, that was back when, you know, I was coming through school and going into high school when Gable was on his string of, you know, I think he won nine in a row. I think my senior in high school was the year that the string was stopped. You know, they were going for their 10th in a row, and you know, so it was always a dream to wrestle for Iowa, and when I got the chance, you know, I jumped all over it, and you know, it was quite an experience. It's, you know, obviously, you know, being around somebody like Coach Gable is, you know, you don't think about it when you're doing it, but boy, when you look back, it's, you know, you were pretty lucky. And you know, usually when I'm going through it, I'm thinking, how can I find something to throw at him and tell him off and get away from him. You know, he's pretty demanding, and you know, I mean, he knew a lot of, you know, he knew stuff. I mean, he was very, very good at what he did, and very motivating. He knew how to push everybody's buttons, and you know, it's just really hard to believe how good he really was.
One thing that always strikes me is interesting is that, unlike some sports, wrestling and the recruiting for wrestling often comes from real small areas and tiny schools. I mean, Eagle Grove is a pretty small community. What is it about those kinds of smaller rural communities do you think have made wrestling so big in those areas? And how do those college coaches find you out there? I mean, they must, you know, that must be kind of a big deal when somebody comes to a small town like that, especially a guy like Dan Gable with his Olympic championships and undefeated record.
Well, you know, I think it's changed quite a bit over the years, but, you know, really looking back and, you know, you can say this about the state of Iowa in particular is, you know, really when wrestling was king and, you know, small towns were, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of difference between 1A, 2A, 3A, and there's a lot of depth in each class at the high school level was, you know, really when the farming communities were you know, going full strength. And, you know, now I don't think, you know, there's so many big farming operations that, you know, kind of takes away from that work ethic that kids got from the farm. And, you know, I didn't grow up on a farm, but you know, both my parents grew up on farms, and you kind of had that mentality, I guess, coming through you. And I don't think today you see that. So I think it's backed off a little bit. And now, you know, there's so many big tournament, big opportunities to get seen where, you know, back then there really wasn't. So, you know, I just think the, you know, Gable really tried to recruit within the state, and he knew who the best targets were inside his borders, and some of the, you know, some of the best kids outside too. But, you know, the times have changed. It's kind of a different world than what it, you know, I mean, ideally what it was, you know, 25, 30 years ago.
So what, when you're talking about being recruited for Iowa, did he come and chat with you in the living room? Is it like a football or a basketball recruiting, or is it, you know, is there a scholarship offer? And then, you know, does it follow kind of the same recipe?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, I basically, you know, and you're talking about something that happened 25 years ago, so it's a little fuzzy, but, you know, you know, I usually get a phone call once a week, whether it be Coach Gable or you know, whoever was talking to me on the phone. And you know, they actually came up and watched us, Bart Chelsvig and I, who was at Webster City, which was also in our conference and kind of one of our rivals at the time. And Bart and I were best friends. And, you know, Bart was a three-time state champ coming out of high school and undefeated his last 3 years and was kind of the top recruit in the state. And so they came up and watched us, and, you know, Bart and I had come down here and worked out during the summer before our senior years. And, you know, so we had some experience with the staff and with the area. Bart's sister actually lived here, so we had come down and stayed with her and worked out. And so we had some contact, but, you know, the rules are a little bit different now. And, you know, signing day was actually today for, you know, wrestling, basketball and such. And, you know, back then, you know, you could be there when somebody's signing, you could be there, I think. And you know, when they're signing their letter of intent now, I think it's a dead period. You can't, I don't even think you can talk to them for 48 hours and so on and so forth. So, you know, things are a little bit different, but, you know, it was, you know, there was a lot of contact. And, you know, like I said, I mean, Coach Gables, I think he kind of realized he needed to put a lot of, you know, he put a lot of emphasis in our class coming in because, you know, he had kind of lost, I don't want to say lost control, but, you know, that was the year that they lost the national title, and he got a little, a little concerned with the direction of the program, and you know, he brought in, you know, Brand's brothers came in the same time I did, and Chelsea and myself, and you know, I mean, right there is, I don't know, 12 All-Americans and six national titles, so I think he did all right with our group.
Yeah, I think so. One of my favorite authors is John Irving. He's a graduate from the Iowa Writers Workshop, and he was a wrestler himself, and he writes about wrestling a lot. And one thing that always has struck me interesting is that he talks about it being such a unique sport from the standpoint of you almost have to be obsessive and a little bit of a masochist to do it. I mean, in terms of the sacrifice and the nature of the sport. Talk a little bit about that and what kept you driving forward, especially at such a high level that you wrestled at, Mark?
Well, I think, honestly, I think you got to be a little off-center. I mean, you just got to be a little crazy. And, you know, the thing is I think most really, really good wrestlers are usually ultra-competitive. I mean, you look at Tom and Terry Brands, and they'd get in a fight over a rock, paper, scissors match, you know? I mean, you sit at the table and do rock, paper, scissors, and there'll be fists flying before long. You know, they're just that competitive. And you need to have that, and you need to be able to push yourself when, you know, I mean, there's days you wake up and you just don't want to do it and realize that the guy you're going to wrestle tomorrow is doing it, and, you know, there's just no way around it. And
see, I know exactly what you're talking about because we went to Azteca tonight, and I ordered 3 enchiladas. And I finished 2, and I was like, there's no way I can finish that last enchilada. But I pushed myself.
I dug sometimes you got to do that.
And you should never talk to wrestlers about food, though, man, because that's like the worst thing, right? I mean, that cutting weight's got to just be a nightmare. That's a question I always had as a non-wrestler. That's not a sport I did. How do you perform at a high level while you're also in a certain aspect starving yourself? I've never quite understood how guys do that.
Well, I can tell you that I rarely starve myself. I weight cutting's changed quite a bit from when I was in college, but you know, I just basically what we did was just we worked out so much that we could eat whatever we wanted. I mean, when you're working out 3 times a day at that level, you're burning so many calories, and I mean, it's sick. What I mean, if I would have had a healthy diet, I'd be afraid of what I would have eaten. Like,
see, there's that comes to my gym, and you know, I'll run on the treadmill, and I'll look over, and this guy's like wrapping himself in garbage bags and putting on hoodies and sweats and everything, and I think there's still some of the old school guys are still out there, Mark.
Yeah, well, I mean, water weight is water weight, you know. I mean, it's not getting fat off of you, it's getting weight out of you, and that weight's going right back in you as soon as you start drinking it. But, you know, weight cutting was a science to us. I mean, it really was, and like I said, it's changed quite a bit from when we did it, you know, because it was, I think, a couple of years after I got out of college is when they had the deaths and the 3 deaths, I think, in college, and all the rules changed in a hurry about weight cutting and so on and so forth. But, you know, we had it down to, we knew how many minutes it was going to take, you know, and if we didn't feel like we're sweating, we'd have to go an extra 6 to 9 to 12 minutes. I mean, we didn't do any more than we had to, let's just put it that way. We had it down pretty good.
Is it true that you guys in that era that you used to have like a guy from a lighter weight class like get piggyback on you and run up and down the stairs of Carver? Is that just an apocryphal story? Is that true?
I usually didn't have a lighter guy. I usually had a heavier guy.
Oh, shit. So I imagine that's probably not real easy.
No, I mean, you're 20 years old, you don't know any different. I mean, if somebody did that now, I'm already carrying an extra guy. I don't need a third guy on me, you know. I mean, we did some things that, you know, I think one of my favorite lines, and it was, I think, in one of our, somebody did a documentary on us, and Terry Brands, I think, was quoted as saying, "We do things that make a billy goat puke." And you think about it, and yeah, I mean, there's a lot of truth to it. I mean, wheelbarrowing up and down those stairs in Carver is not a lot of fun. I know we buddy carried up once and wheelbarrowed down, and I think our trainer told Gable that might not be the best thing because of he was more concerned of our arms giving out and our face going into the concrete steps and breaking our teeth out, I think, more than anything. He wasn't worried about us. So, he was just worried about our teeth.
So Gable said, well, make him wear the mouthpieces then.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, well,
one last Gable-related question before we kind of move into the your current and what you're doing now and the current wrestling team. But, you know, one of the things we've always heard about Gable is that he had that different approach. He was kind of a great psychiatrist. So some guys he'd really, you know, bust on and ride them hard. Other guys he was a little more, I guess, lenient, or maybe not lenient is probably the wrong word, but he had a different approach. What kind of approach did he take with you? Were you a carrot or a stick type?
Well, he knew what buttons to push. He basically kind of ignored me, which kind of got me going. And you know, I wasn't one of his favorites, and that always bothered me. So, you know, I mean, I could have been one of his favorites. I just didn't know it. You know, I mean,
it's, so you probably it's actually thing. Were
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, he knew how to play. I mean, he really did, and he was very. You don't like it at the time, but he was very, very good at it. And, you know, I mean, you learn a lot from somebody like that. And you just, you know, with the team and the different personalities that you have like that, and, you know, he was surrounded by good coaches too. And those guys would, you know, either you were Gable's boy or you were Mark Johnson's boy or Zaleski's boy or, you know, I mean, somebody took care of you, but Gable ultimately, you know, was pulling the strings, and you know he was pretty special.
So, as teammates, did you see the future coach in Tom Brands? Does that surprise you, or?
Well, it's kind of funny because out of our 10 starters that we had, I think every one of them is a coach except Chad Zapital. Our entire team. You got Tom Ryan that's coaching at Ohio State, and you got Tom and Terry that are here. The Steiners, one Steiner's at the Olympic Training Center. The other Steiner's out in Oregon with Zaleski. Travis Fizer's coaching a high school out in Virginia, and Ozendorf's coaching at Coe, and Chelsdig was a longtime assistant at Wisconsin. So I'm just a lowly high school coach out of the group.
Now that's not fair because you're at a wrestling powerhouse in the state at Iowa City West. And before we started recording, you were telling us about your quote unquote down year, but give us a few stats of how your teams have performed over the years.
Well, I mean, we've had a nice run, and last year was kind of a year of breaking a bunch of streaks that we had going. I mean, we had finished in the top four of the state tournament 12 years in a row, and that's something that no other school has ever done, which, you know, I took a lot of pride in, our team took a lot of pride in. And we also had a string last year of 10 straight state dual meet top three finishes, so, and no other team's ever done that either, and, you know, and that's a little unfair because state duels hasn't been around all that long, but, you know, I mean, we've had a run that not many programs could ever compare to, and, you know, yeah, we were eighth last year, and you know, hopefully we don't get eighth again, you know, hopefully we're moving up, and you know, but we've been fortunate. We've had a lot of good kids run through our program, and you know, probably the highlight last year, you know, with having the bad year was, you know, watching one of our former kids win a national title for Iowa. So, you know, it's it's got its ups and downs, but you know, overall, I think we're, you know, we're going to try to right the ship this year and see where we're at.
Well, if you're talking about righting the ship after finishing a top 10 back into the top 4, I think that's a pretty good position to be in.
Well, you know, nobody likes to be 8th.
Well, except the guy who's 9th.
Kirk Ferentz took 3 top 8s into a, 20-year contract?
$20 million a year.
I guess it's context, though, right, Mark? It's all context.
Yeah, I'll take his bonus. I'll get 25th if I can get his bonus.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, speaking of, we should probably switch gears here and put you on the spot a little bit for, because this is ostensibly a football podcast, although we love talking to folks about other sports and other activities. But what are you thinking about Iowa this year? They turned it around quite a bit from last year, bowl eligible, couple games left, but still a lot of question marks. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think they're getting better. I think every week they get better. And, you know, the only game that I've missed actually is the Ohio State game. And you know, they actually played pretty well there. But, you know, it was fun going to Purdue last weekend. And you know, because I've been to Purdue where we haven't played very well. And those fans aren't very much fun. And, boy, they sure were quiet, and there weren't very many of them this week. So,
Mark actually gets to legitimately say "we." Unlike you and I, Jim, when we say "we," you know, from him, he actually is a former Iowa athlete. So, I think it's more acceptable.
I just say "we" because I wear Iowa stuff.
There you go.
Well, stay
then,
with us.
So do I. All of us "we's." Yeah,
I think we're getting better, and you know, obviously you almost got to have love to see one game where you put it all together. You know, we kind of did against Purdue, but we started slow, and you know, I mean, Purdue's not a very good team to really measure that on, and I think we got two really big opportunities ahead of them that, you know, both very winnable games, and both would be very big wins, and you know, I think if they put it together, I think they can finish the season pretty strong.
Amen to that.
Yeah. So
I mean, that signature win.
So Michigan coming up next. We're going to put you on the spot here for a prediction.
You what do you want? You want to score? Or you want to know who's going to win?
Yeah, both.
Yeah, we usually do both.
I tell you what, I mean, Michigan's is a tough one to read right now. I mean, to have two games in a row where you have like negative 40 yards rushing,
yeah.
Mean, how do you even stay in games that way? And you know, the bad part is they got that quarterback that, you know, is always he's kind of scary to play against because he's athletic. And you know, he's a wide receiver last year for part of the year, and you know, he's a big, strong kid, and you know, they got a good receiver. You know, their running game obviously is not very good, but part of that is the quarterback sacks. And you know, I'm anxious to see how they play against Northwestern this week, just to see if, you know, we know how good Michigan State's defense is. I mean, hands down, that's those guys are unbelievable. You just shake your head watching them because they are so physical and so fast, so good. And you know, was it just, you know, Michigan still having their dobber down last week? I don't know, but you know, I think we'll beat Michigan here. I don't think Michigan plays very well on the road. I don't think they have all year. So I think, you know, I think we win. You know, whether it's, I don't know what the score will be. I'll take 24-17. How about that?
That sounds pretty reasonable to me. You know, I do think that's the case. We need to get some of that Kinnick magic back. I think Iowa's played better on the road this year in the Big Ten than they have at home.
Yeah, well, I mean, beating Minnesota, I mean, at the time, we didn't think Minnesota was all that good, and they're sitting there 8-2 right now, and, you know, beat Nebraska, beat, you know, beat Northwestern, and, you know, I think we'll turn and see that that was a pretty big win when it's all said and done. But, you know, I think we have probably played better on the road this year, and I don't think Michigan plays very good on the road. So, mm-hmm. you know, we you know, hopefully should be able to hold serve here at home and then get to travel west to see them people with that big old N on their head.
Stands for knowledge. Well, hopefully, yes, hopefully some of your, you know, magic from your wrestling career can rub off onto the football team there. You know, we can always have a little bit of that attitude. I've always said, you know, when you look for the, you know, bellwether program at the University of Iowa, it's definitely the wrestling team. So it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Well, I've enjoyed it. And you guys, been a lot of fun.
Well, thanks, Mark. And again, appreciate you coming on. And we'll make sure to let you know when this thing posts.
And good luck to West this year. Who are your big? Who are some of the other power programs in the big schools in Iowa this year?
Well, I looked at the national rankings as four teams in the top 50. Four teams from Iowa in the top 50: Southeast Polk, Bettendorf, Waverly, and Linmar are all in the top 50. So, yeah, those are four pretty good teams right off the bat in our class. So, I mean, it's going to be tough, but you know, it's going to be tough every year. You know, I don't know if it's as deep as it was a year ago. I think there's a lot of good kids that were seniors, and the strengths of the teams probably aren't as strong all the way through, but you know, I mean, those are four pretty solid teams, and you know, practice starts Monday, and I guess we'll see where we end up.
Well, good luck. We're wishing you luck the rest of the year.
All right, thank you very much.
I would love to see, you know, if it ever works out, or if it ever doesn't work out with Ferentz. I always thought, well, what if we put Dan Gable as our head
exactly.
coach.
Just let the assistant. All he'd be in charge of is motivation and recruiting, and everybody else. Just,
his whole job is to stare at guys until they get better. Just glare at them when they screw up. So
as I sit here in my sweatpants, drinking a beer on my couch, watching television, I kind of feel loserish after that conversation, Jim.
I know, talking to somebody like Mark makes you feel like you could work out from now until the day you die and never really not feel fat.
Exactly.
So, but yeah, I mean, wrestling is, I told you my story about the Iranian cab driver in southern Germany, right? The only English he spoke was Iowa City and wrestling.
Right, right.
So,
and the great Dan Gable.
Yeah, so it's famous. I mean, and I know that, you know, in Iran, wrestling is a really big deal, and they knew more about Iowa City than the Germans did. So,
well, you know, and it was always interesting to me. I've only gone to a handful of the wrestling matches, but the people that are into it are really into it. So, yeah. You know, kind of a neat thing to have as a legacy for your school. I'd kill to have one football national championship. To think, what a tough problem to have. You know, you go 8 years or 9 years or whatever winning national championships, and then the next year you only finish in the top five, and it's time to reevaluate everything.
Oh, yeah. Well, and how would you like to have been in the locker room, when Dan Gable didn't win his 10th national championship?
Yeah, that probably wasn't fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, wrestling is something that we can be really proud of in the state. And I think, like a lot of other sports, the landscape is changing and parity is now kind of a fact of life. I mean, we've seen other schools getting good. Penn State was, you know, nothing, I think, you know, for a while, and now they're actually a powerhouse. So.
What's interesting, though, is if you start looking at the teams that are doing well, almost all of them have ties at least to the state of Iowa. I mean, you know, look at Kale Sanderson at Penn State, was the great wrestler from Iowa State. Right. You know, I think the Wisconsin and Illinois coaches are both former Iowa assistants or Iowa wrestlers. So Ohio State, I think, is a former Iowa wrestler. So, I mean, it's kind of an interesting thing, is that this is very much ground zero for wrestling excellence, which is
absolutely.
But it's better for the sport, I think, to have more parity. You know,
yeah.
More
well, you know, and then that's the consequence of Iowa exporting our success. You know, when you have, you know, like Mark was saying, when you have, you know, 10 or 12 guys going to coaching from a team, and you know, that's 10 or 12 teams that are going to do well now. Not all of them can be head coaches at Iowa.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. How that worked out for Tom Brands.
Yeah, yeah, he's got the crazy stare thing too, so, you know.
So, pivoting back to football, I think you and I were, I loved your column this week, by the way. It's like, you know, well, the way I took away from that was, you know, mediocrity achieved. adequacy on deck.
I think it's maybe a little stronger than that. First of all, it's funny that you said you loved my column this week, because my wife said that too, and I actually had the worst writer's block that I've had in about 2 years of writing that column this week, because, you know, the Purdue game was kind of boring and there wasn't a game right away coming up. And I'm not saying I mailed it in, but it was hard. Maybe I need to work harder and then they turn out better. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, you know, I think one of my thoughts is about that signature win. And, you know, yeah, at the end of the season, I think we're going to look back and say the Minnesota win was good, because they're going to end up having a fine record and have beaten some teams. But at the end of the day, come on, it's still Minnesota. Nobody's going to take that seriously. You need a name, a pelt to put on the wall, so to speak, you know. And
well,
Michigan,
your next
and Nebraska
best win,
are right there.
Yeah, well, what's your next best win? If you don't, you know, as it stands right now, what's your next best win? Iowa State.
I'd say Northwestern, because they were sort of the preseason media darling. Now, Northwestern's one of those teams where, you know how people say injuries shouldn't be an excuse? You know what? Even though I hate Northwestern, you got to think that the injuries that they've had really derailed their season. I mean, when you got Coulter out, Venrick Mark out, and so many injuries like that, you know, I'm willing to throw them an excuse bone a little bit. It's not an excuse. It's a reason.
Well, I'm just saying that, yeah, I mean, absolutely. With Venrick Mark, I mean, I think we're finding out just how important he was to Northwestern's offense. And their defense was okay, but never really going to carry that team. But I think, you know, really, I mean, after that, you look at, Missouri State, you look at Western Michigan, you look at Purdue, you look at Iowa State. There's a lot of, you know, bottom feeders. But what did I say last year? What have I always been saying? My biggest beef with Ferentz is you got to beat the bottom of your schedule.
Right.
Right. I mean, I'm okay losing to the Ohio State, the Wisconsin and the Michigan State. Less okay losing to Northern Illinois, although it's looking like they're a pretty good school. But, you know, here's like exactly what you're saying. It's like Michigan and Nebraska look like they are in the middle of the pack this year.
Right.
You beat them and you're in the upper tier. You lose to them and you're in the bottom tier. And you split with them and then you're in the middle with them. So I guess that's that's where we are, right? Here it's November and that's what it shakes out to be.
Exactly. And what's interesting to me with the way the schedule was this year is that it really is really good teams and really bad teams. I mean, because the combined record of the teams we've lost to now is like, what, 32-3 or something like that? And it shouldn't even be three. It should be two, because Wisconsin got hosed at Arizona State so badly.
Right.
That should have been a victory. It sucks to not win one of those games. But again, Iowa was competitive in all of them, which is a step up from last year again. But yeah, I think that exactly what you said, you
what's
have an opportunity
record
now
to beat
a peer,
beat?
You know?
What's the,
well,
what's
that's the thing.
The
I don't know
beat?
Their overall record, but it's bad. I know that because the only, as you said, the only team with a good record, I think, is Minnesota sitting at 8-2.
Yeah. And like you said, Northwestern had a good record. We just kind of kicked them off the cliff. They were kind of teetering and they haven't pulled out of it yet. So,
well, that,
so yeah, one
that
of these two.
Horrible loss to Nebraska that they had, that heartbreaker with the Hail Mary.
Yeah, but that was, I mean, I wish it had happened against somebody else, but that was just delicious.
Well, you know, what's interesting to me, though, is that it makes you wonder how different both of those teams' seasons would be if that catch hadn't been made. Because if you recall, Nebraska had lost to Minnesota. The fans were in an uproar. The coach said he hated the fans. They had all that going on. And now all of a sudden things are kind of, I wouldn't say they're happy, happy, joy, joy over in Lincoln, but you know, you come back, then you beat Michigan, a name team. All of a sudden, you know, meantime, yeah. Northwestern's even circling further down the drain. So, I mean, talk about one play being so pivotal, that's a smart word, so pivotal to two teams' fortunes. That's one of the cool things, I guess, about sports, right?
Well, yeah, well, I mean, you can say, like, in that 2010 season, when you look at the fake punt with Wisconsin, yep. And that Terrell Pryor scramble, there's two plays that Iowa's season turned on. You know, the year before, there were two plays, the Tyler Sash pick six pinball,
right.
And the Adrian Claiborne punt block. I mean, those were two plays that, well, and seven got six. I mean, there's three plays. So, yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of college football is people like to talk about programs and dynasties and, you know, but really it can be that close. It can be like you were noticing in the Wisconsin game. These guys are putting the ball on the turf and it's bouncing right back into yeah. their arms. And the shape of the football says that shouldn't happen more than 50% of the time. But, you know, but sometimes it does.
And some people, Jim, will argue that fake punt against Wisconsin kind of spiraled the Iowa program into its, you know, little recession that we're just now climbing our way back up.
We've never been burned by another fake punt ever since.
So, but I think opportunity knocks. And, you know, what do you think when you look at Michigan?
You know, I think Mark said it best. It's like, how do you read them right now? I mean, you know, we beat Minnesota. These guys laid almost, 50 points on Minnesota? So they had an offense as recently as a month ago.
Right.
Now it's nothing but negative numbers. Yeah. So, you know, really hard to read. He's absolutely right about Gardner, who is the kind of quarterback that unfortunately lines up very well against Iowa. And I think that both, and I hope they, you know, this bye week gives them enough time to study tapes, because I think part of the success that Michigan State and Nebraska had is they just gave him like no time in the pocket.
Yeah.
And if you got a guy like Gardner and you got him contained so he can't run and he has no time to make a passing decision, then yes, he's going to be a disaster.
Well, I think Gardner, and I'm going to get kind of deep on you here, but I think Gardner is kind of a microcosm of this year's Michigan team in that he looks the part, you know, he's got the skill set. But I think he's a little mentally soft. I think if he could get into his head and get him doubting himself, then you can really make him mistake prone. And I think their whole program is sort of like that. You know, they've got all the 4- and 5-star recruits, but I don't sense a lot of confidence out of them. And I sense a little bit of mental weakness. And, you know, in the past, those are the kinds of teams that Ferentz has really had a field day against. So, you know, I'm really hopeful that he comes up with a good game plan.
Well, isn't it true that, you know, you'll hear a lot of guys who've played football or, you know, any team sport tell you, you've got to trust the guy next to you. You know, when you're on the bench as a defense, you got to trust the offense and vice versa. And maybe part of it is, yes, they don't believe in themselves. And then they also don't believe in the guys around them either.
Yeah,
you know?
I think that could be it.
And it all just kind of, you know, spirals out of control and it becomes this negative feedback. I think of the two, I think Michigan is probably, you know, more ripe for the upset. Is it an upset?
Well,
we're favored.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. You know,
it's in Iowa City, I think they're, you know, of the two, they're the ones I would bet for us to pick off.
But I'll turn that around and say, as I was saying to Mark, I think Iowa seems like they've been hungrier and more focused on the road. They seem to be kind of lethargic when they're playing at Kinnick, and I really don't know why. You know, I think literally the best Iowa's looked this entire season to me was the first half of the Ohio State game. You know, the entirety of the Minnesota game, and both of those were road games. You know, when have they looked like crisp and sharp in Kinnick? I mean, even in their wins, they haven't exactly.
Western Michigan.
Yeah, but come on.
Yeah. No, I hear what you're saying, and I think that, you know, aside from a muffed punt and, you know, the second string defense
taken a nap there, it would have been probably a shutout at Purdue. I don't know. I'm, you know, looking back more and more, it's that win against Minnesota is starting to look more and more like question marks. Like, how did we get out of there with that? But of course, they had some personnel issues they had to figure out, not the least of which being, you know, what's up with their coach. But yeah, it does seem like they're a little crisper on the road. I just don't feel like, I don't know, last game of the season going into Lincoln, I just feel less sure about that. I still think they've got a good shot, though.
Sure.
Just,
well, you know, it's a senior day, and you know, and they'll be playing for a decent bowl slot, it looks like. So,
plus, if this winter or this fall is any indicator, it's going to be like 4 degrees below zero yeah. by the time that game kicks off. Yeah.
Well, that's why, again, I actually wish that Hail Mary hadn't been caught, because I had a feeling that Nebraska was teetering on the edge of having everything come crash around them, and that was when they would have been really ripe for a kick in the teeth. But
and who do they play this week?
Well, Michigan State, so they might get a little kick in the teeth anyway, so we'll see.
They might get their kick just a week delayed, and yeah, so that's a good point. Well, you know, so I think you and I have to make a prediction about the Michigan game, and then we've got some administrative announcements for...
Administrative announcements, yes.
Yeah, so I think 24-17 sounds pretty good. I think if our offense is clicking, and hello, Mr. Canzari, welcome to the program, I would say that we could actually maybe do a little bit better. I would even put us as much as, like, 31 would be my score, but I think that Michigan starts to get it together, and I think it's actually a little closer than that. I think we win 31-27.
See, I'm going to go the opposite tact of you. I think Michigan's offense is awry, and Iowa has the 11th-ranked defense in the country right now, so I think we're going to stuff their run, but I foresee us still having our weird offensive woes inside Kinnick, which we've had all season. So I'm going to go with 19-13, with the good guys winning.
Ooh, that's like a Hayden Fry score.
Yeah, it's going to be nerve-wracking and not pretty, my prediction.
Well, I won't be there, so you're going to have to scream extra loud.
That is true. That is true. And I do need your two tickets, by the way. So I've got a little group coming. So
I need some money.
we'll work that out on the side.
Yeah, no, I'll try to follow as well as I can over the internet. And past history being any guide, that's hit or miss.
Yeah, I don't know. It's some of the biggest wins that I've seen were without you next to me. So
this is shaping up to
be a good one.
Could be a good one. All right, so then announcements. I mean, I think the first one being that probably not going to do a podcast next week.
Yeah, we called the podcast 12 Saturdays, and I think we're closing in on having 15 or 16 by the time the season's over. So
depends on which bowl game and how many Saturdays in between.
Exactly. But, so, you know, we want to be respectful of our audience and
It's not that we're lazy at all.
No, it has nothing to do with that at all.
Running out of people willing to be guests.
Right. And quickly realizing that, you know, we don't know that many experts in interesting things.
Yeah, we know a lot of, we do know a lot of arcane experts and Joel things. So that would be, and, you know, that's keeping with the fact that you're not looking at a column next week. And I think Ferentz had an abbreviated press conference. I think they're probably cutting the practice schedule short so everybody can rest up.
It's a late football rest week, I guess. Yeah,
I think so. So enjoy the week off as a football spectator. We're always spectators.
That is true. So our next administrative announcement has to do with the format of the 12 Saturdays podcast, which I think we're going to try something a little different next season, in that we're going to try to do two shorter podcasts instead of one long one. And the first one is going to be kind of a reactionary one, because it seems like we're usually recording on Tuesday or Wednesday and not getting it out till Friday. So seems like kind of pointless to talk about the game that already occurred at that time. So we're going to try to get you some like fresher stuff so that we're all like riled up and angry, like the people that call into Hawk Talk after the game.
Well, and fresh being the operative word there, because, you know, for like the 48 hours after a game, particularly if it's an ugly loss, we get a little, we get a little animated.
Right. And with each other sometimes too.
Yeah, we get a little.
We get along way too well this year.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, we've been doing better, Tori. Oh, you know, another 4 and 8 year, and one of us is going to be dead. But so then we'll have that, and then we'll also pivot to the same time with another short one leading up to the upcoming game.
Right. So you'll have your drive to Iowa City listening pleasure.
They'll have to drive faster, though, because it'll probably only be about 30, 35 minutes long.
Yeah, so it's mostly for people from, like, Cedar Rapids.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, exactly. From bluegrass.
Muskets.
Yeah. And then I think that the other thing we really want to emphasize, we've had some really great, some of my favorite moments this year. I'm talking like the season's already over, but some of my famous moments so far this year have been some of the interactions we've had with folks on Twitter.
Yes.
And I think in addition to having guests on the podcast, it would be a lot of fun to play back some of the fun interactions that we've had with people on Twitter, particularly on the reaction show, right, where we don't have a guest lined up and we can just say, hey, remember when that jerk said this and then you retweeted that? And, you know,
we should try to get that Korean dude as a guest.
I love that dude.
I do too.
And for those who don't follow us, there is some guy that tweets at us in Korean and we have to run it through Google Translate like several days later, and he is hilarious. And Adolf, if we could ever get him on the show, that would be awesome.
Well, you know, this is the 21st century, so we can probably do it. aren't you the one that told me that their bandwidth is like 10 times better in Korea than it is here?
Oh, absolutely. They could probably, yeah. So, they could just stream DVDs for no purpose at all.
We could Skype that dude.
Exactly. Well, let's you know, try and reach out to folks like him and others that we seem to have good interactions with. There's a couple of folks that are particularly witty and funny on Twitter. A couple of folks maybe take it a little too far, you know.
No.
It's amazing what anonymity plus the internet plus bruised football egos will gin up sometimes.
That is for sure.
So we've made our predictions. We get a week off. Tori, you going to watch some games?
I'm going to watch some basketball games live and in person. I have season tickets, like I said, this year. So, and maybe we'll end up doing 29 podcasts anyway. So whatever.
Well, what's the Big Ten ACC Challenge? That's in December this year, isn't it?
Yes, December 3rd, 8:15 tip off. I've invited you to go against Notre Dame.
Oh, I'm there. So we'll figure out a way to make that happen.
As long as you're not in, you know, Buenos Aires or something.
Nah, I'm back by Thanksgiving. So
okay.
Awesome. All right. Well, so enjoy your week off, and we'll catch up. We'll recap the Michigan game and look ahead to the season finale in Lincoln.
Cornhuskers.
Bug eaters.
Bug eaters.
All right. Nebraska, let's sign up.
As I say.
What's the Nebraska?
Nebraska. I put the K back in for knowledge.
Of course. Well, we'll have to quote Scott Speaker. Wouldn't that be a fun expert to get?
Maybe next year.
Maybe. All right. Well, with that, we'll say on Iowa.
Go Hawks.